This is Aiden Knight, and you are listening to Wrestle Life Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Wrestle Life Radio, episode 169. I'm joined by Micah. How's it going, Micah?
Doing good, Kyle. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm glad you're here to correct my mistake. I had us marked for episode 168, and because Micah and Riley recorded last week's episode and used another device, so like our archives were not numbered right or something, and I was totally about to record with the wrong number. So,
well, we may or may not have two episode 167s because I did the exact same thing.
So. Well, we might.
Well, I pulled up our feed on iTunes, which is how I listen to podcasts, right. And the last episode was 166. But I forgot that you guys did a WrestleMania review that I listened to, so it was no longer on my feed. So it's fine. It's just
so a little detail. This might be episode 170. We're not sure.
Yeah, we don't know what we are anymore.
We're a cooking podcast now. We're changing genres.
Yeah, Kyle's got a regular zoo going over there.
I actually do.
We may turn to an animal podcast.
Yeah, we might.
How many dogs do you have in your house right now?
Five.
Five. I have two, and that's too many.
Yeah. I had one a couple years ago. I've had two because my dad had Caleb for me, my little dachshund. Yep. And then I met Stephanie. She had two dogs and two cats. And the cats are still in Florida. We added the dogs, and then Caleb came back and lived with us. So we had four, and now her brother's visiting and he's got a puppy. So we've got four dogs and a puppy, which feels like we have like seven dogs because the puppy's all over the place.
Yeah. The puppy counts for at least three dogs.
Yeah. And he's tiny, but he's everywhere. So
I'm surprised to have such a little background noise, to be honest with you. So,
well, I actually moved to the bedroom for this episode for the first time in forever, and it might actually be a little bit better because I'm further away from the living room where everybody is. So,
yeah. So if you guys hear a little bit of dog barking, just, you know, roll with us.
Anytime, just ignore it.
Anytime I have Riley record with me, the dogs are usually running around because you can't, like, if I lock them out of the room, they scratch the door. If I leave them in here, they bark. It's a whole thing. It's a real professional show we've got going here, but it's fine. It's entertaining. That's what it's all about. You know,
yep.
Got to have a co-host or two, a guest.
Oh, yeah. So just a regular zoo over here on Wrestle Life Radio.
Yeah. And I don't think we have this day in wrestling history this week. So
I never do.
Yeah. I guess we'll just go straight into this week's episode because I think it was a really packed episode. And
it was.
We can talk a little bit. You know, NXT has now moved to Tuesday nights. So AEW has been running unopposed for 2 weeks. Last week they did 1.2 million. This week they did 1.1, which is really good. There was no Mike Tyson this week, and it was their second week, and they only dropped 100,000 viewers. I think it's really good future ahead of AEW. The Challenge, which is their number one contender on Wednesday nights, is now moving, or it's over for a few months. And, Raw sits at what? 1.7, 1.8?
So, something like that. They've actually been up, too, as of late, which is surprising. I mean, you expect the Raw after Mania and the shows kind of following up for Mania to be big, but nobody was thinking, especially since, like, basically, I mean, they actually advertised Randy Orton versus Braun Strowman like all week. And they were like Braun Strowman posted about it on his Instagram. Like, it's first time I'm going to face Randy Orton. Like, it was actually a first time two singles guys were facing each other. Like, it was baffling. It's like, wait, what? These guys are in WWE and they never face each other? Like, it's so rare. So people were actually looking forward to it. And Vince got in on Monday and he was like, oh, got to rewrite the show. So they rewrote everything. Some people thought they were watching a rerun because they opened Raw with Shelton Benjamin versus Viking Raiders and it had the exact same ending. It was just crazy. So... but surprisingly, they had a good rating. So wrestling is up right now, kind of across the board. So
it's crazy how that worked. You know, when COVID hit, you'd think everybody's inside, wrestling would go up. It really didn't. It went down. Now that people are kind of starting to go out, more vaccines are rolling out, wrestling's going up. It's weird. I don't get it. I guess people are going and doing things during the day. They're actually getting out and going to work. Maybe they want to stay home and watch wrestling at night. I don't know. It's a bit strange. But it's working out for AEW for sure. They're unopposed Wednesday nights. It's working out for NXT as well. Their ratings have been up. It's a win-win situation, really, because everybody gets to enjoy more wrestling, and you don't have to worry about flipping through the channels. And there's a wrestling show like every day of the week now, sometimes multiple wrestling shows. Yeah. So I think it's great.
And speaking of great, I really enjoyed this episode of Dynamite.
Yeah, this was such a stacked card looking at it. Like, there was so much good wrestling on this show.
You have two title matches?
Yeah, two title matches that were both very good. Mm-hmm. Opening up the show, Ricky Starks versus Hangman Adam Page, two of my favorite people in AEW. Obviously, Hangman Adam Page is my favorite wrestler. I've got his figure sitting right here next to me. My dog chewed up the box, speaking of dogs. So he's now unboxed. I wasn't planning on unboxing him, but now I get to have him wrestle my wife's Kenny Omega figure. So
nice.
I'm gonna break that out. But yeah, Hangman Adam Page, Ricky Starks, really, really good match. What did you think about the ankle injury? Did you think that was a shoot injury?
I think it is, because he made the run in later in the show and he was definitely selling it. It's just one of those things that, like, if it wasn't a shoot injury, I don't think it's a serious injury, but I feel like if it was a worked injury, he would just come out with a taped up ankle or something, or they would have, like, I don't know, but I think it was legit, which is kind of strange because he landed on his freaking neck or his head.
Yeah. It didn't really seem like to me, though, that Paige was trying to protect him so much, because, like, he made like an awkward landing and his ankles hurt, right? Yeah. Well, then Paige hits him with a power bomb. He hits him with a fallaway slam. He hits him with a lariat, another buckshot lariat. And Stark still delivered a spear after that. I don't know. I'm not sure if it was a worked injury or not, because it also worked into the finish. But is that just good wrestling where they audibled into it? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But basically, Stark's got dropped on his head and his ankles essentially, like, not a scorpion, but like a reverse scorpion. Like, his ankle hit the ground really hard and he just started selling his ankle.
Yeah, Taz did seem genuinely concerned, though.
Yeah. So, but... I mean, still a really good match, and Starks finished it. Has Hangman done this move before? I haven't really seen it. I can't remember it.
Yeah, I actually pointed out to Riley, we were watching it. Hangman Adam Page actually won via submission, which I've never seen before. It was like a cross face. It was almost
it's like a bulldog choke, essentially. Yeah. But the way he set it up too is similar to how like Randy Orton used to, he would do his backbreaker where he'd almost do like a, or at least that's what it reminded me of. He would do like, he'd like hang the guy over his back and then like kind of crack his neck. But here, Hangman kind of got him in a neck hold and like almost reverse judo threw him over his shoulder and then turned it into a bulldog choke. Like, it's really cool.
While also working the rear ankle.
Yes.
Because it's kind of like set up like a bank statement. No, the bank statement is a backstabber. What is it? Whose move is it that's set up like this? Is it AJ Styles has a move like this? I don't know. It doesn't matter. He like put his body weight on his ankle and also choked him out, which is just really cool looking. And he like, it wasn't like I'm going to put you in a submission move. It's like, oh, we're going into a submission move now, whether you want to or not. That's basically what happened. He just picked him up, threw him down, and choked him out. It looked really cool. I really liked it.
And it surprised me because I haven't seen it before, and he did it, and it was the finish, and I was like, oh. Great.
Yeah.
Like,
Starks sells the submission so well. He always looks like his eyes are just bugging out of his head and he's just like trying his best to get out of the situation. Ricky Starks is one of the best sellers in the business right now. It's really good.
Yeah. Thing. Yeah. So great opening match. And I'm all for adding new, you know, weapons to your arsenal, new ways to, you know, finish a match. We've already seen him kind of use the Deadeye as another finish. So
and he faked it too. Like, I thought for sure the Deadeye was going to win it because he reversed into the Deadeye, which was really cool. But Starks actually reversed the Deadeye. We never got to see that. So,
a really good opener. After the match, Taz grabbed the mic and said Paige got lucky. He told Paige to watch his back. And I got to say, I was like, as soon as he said, watch your back, Hangman just like sat there and stared at him. I was like, okay, like, come on, man, get the hint. Hook attacking from behind with some terrible offense. And
I think it's like the first time we've seen him do anything, and it's on national TV. So,
and he was stomping him with not very convincing stomps when suddenly big Brian Cage comes out and he goes to set him up for a powerbomb. Dark Order run out and make the save. So, it's looking like we're building to like a Team Taz, Dark Order, maybe something going on with Hangman.
Hey, as long as Sting's not involved, that's fine.
Yep. And then after this, we got the Elite showing up, and they had their own personal trailer.
Yeah, that was, that'll come into effect a little bit later. Just a little shot of them going into the trailer, setting up the events to come. And then we got Trent versus Penta El Zero Miedo, I guess it would be. Which last week it was like El Zero M. They change it every week. They don't know. They just, it's right. Penta. It's Penta with extra stuff afterwards. Doesn't matter. These are two guys that, like, I don't know, if you see Trent in a random singles match on Dynamite, I feel like it's going to be good. If you see Penta in a random match on Dynamite, it's going to be good. And then you got these two guys together, and I think it was good. I mean, It wasn't an amazing match. It wasn't the best on the card, but it was a really solid, just kind of a random match. I mean, I know the Death Triangle and Best Friends have kind of got this trio versus trio thing going, but it didn't have a whole lot of momentum going into it, but that was a really good match. Penta,
obviously, it was a good match, but I hated the finish.
Yeah, I didn't love the finish, but it's kind of, I don't know, it's not something you see a lot in AEW, I guess.
So I feel like we've been seeing a lot more of stuff like this.
It is ramping up. I mean, just the addition of Don Callis. To kind of go over the match, Penta basically chopped Trent to death as he normally does. Trent just getting over a torn pectoral muscle. I'm sure that's got to be just terrible.
And then he was doing like dives and stuff, and they were calling him out for, should he be doing that since he injured his pec?
Yeah.
They're just like ragging on the dude. I was like, I mean, come on, guys.
Yeah. And
not helping here.
There was one spot that was really cool. I mean, you see it a lot in Penta's matches, but Trent was up against the turnbuckle, I guess it would be called, from the outside. What do they call it? The post, the ring post. And yes. Penta went to chop him. Trent moves, and Penta just slaps the snot out of that steel metal ring post.
I listened to Wrestling Observer today at work, and Dave Meltzer had a conniption about him chopping the post and then chopping Trent later in the match.
Oh, really?
Hilarious. Yes. I was just like, Dave.
Yeah, it seemed like a Dave Meltzer thing to do. After that, Penta is kind of just like, you know, in pain, in agony, right? Trent goes to spear Penta, and Penta moves, and Trent spears the guardrail, basically. It's always funny. Like, it's a Samoa Joe thing, right? Where somebody goes for a dive and you just move. I like that in wrestling. You don't see it a lot. But, I mean, if this were real and somebody's running after you, you're just going to step to the side. I like it. I think stuff like that's pretty cool.
Yeah, not all the time. But, yeah, when it, you know, Samoa Joe is really good at it. And, you know, if it happens, you know, a couple times in a match, it's fine with me.
Yeah. Trent gave Penta a pile driver on the apron, which didn't look really good, in my opinion. I mean, it was safe, which is great. I didn't want to see Penta get injured. It's a very scary move, but his head was nowhere near the canvas. But it's okay. Why don't you tell us about the finish, Kyle, though? You said you didn't like the finish.
Yeah, so as we pointed out, Alex, how do you say it? Abrahantes?
Yeah, I think so.
He was out with Penta. And first of all, he's just one of those guys. Like, maybe he just needs some work, but I didn't really buy him as a heel. Like, he seems like he's such a nice guy, and I've seen him be a nice guy on TV before. And like, I don't know. I'm just not buying him as a heel at this point, but he was trying to be one. And so basically in the match, Trent, you know, had control. He, you know, was in a panic. So he runs and grabs a mic. And he basically says, you know, he basically last ditch effort, tries distracting Trent, says that that he sucks, his friend sucks, but most of all, his mother sucks. And this was
not these Sue.
These are fighting. I'm going to kill you words for Trent. So Trent grabs a chair, goes after Abahantes. He slides in the ring, and the referee comes in and says, you can't use the chair. He's distracted and, you know, holding off Trent. Abahantes is in the ring, and he's basically standing in the middle. Orange Cassidy sneaks up behind him, goes to put his hands in his pocket. When Penta slides back in, super kicks Orange. The referee then gets distracted at Orange, I think. And then Abahantes is able to... he hit Trent with the microphone. That's right. And then Penta was able to pick up the win after that.
He hit it with the package pile driver.
Yeah, but just it was a good match, and it was okay. Just like, yeah, it was just a little convoluted for a finish. Just the random distraction, and
it was a little overbooked. I was starting to think it was a Cody match.
Yeah, the referee had to get distracted by Trent and then by Orange Cassidy. And yeah, just it was a little much, you know, for the ending. I felt like they could have done it in a better way. But Death Triangle get the win here. So I'm guessing the feud is going to continue.
We're maybe, definitely getting Death Triangle versus Best Friends on. I'm thinking maybe the Blood and Guts show.
I thought you said Best Triangle versus Best Friends.
Yes, Best Triangle versus the Best Friends.
Yes. But so it looks like they're going to continue the story. I wonder if Trent's mother will get involved at some point, because who knows, you know.
She'll probably end up like spearing Alex Abahantes or something.
Maybe.
It might be a conflict of interest, though. They're both in the Dark Order. So.
Is it? I didn't know Alex was in Dark Order.
Yeah,
is that just a BTE thing?
It's a BTE thing. I don't think it's involved in Dynamite at all.
Not canon.
Yeah, he's Drake the Kool-Aid.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah, just a little too good match, but a little bit convoluted finish.
Yeah, that happens a lot in AEW though.
Yeah.
I mean, we get a lot of good wrestling with a little bit of a, you know, convoluted ending, but at least we get there. We then had Jim Ross sit down to interview the Pinnacle. And there wasn't a whole lot of Jim Ross interviewing, more than there was the Pinnacle talking, because obviously you've got MJF there, who's going to just take up all the screen time.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about how Chris Jericho was saying that his scarf was, you know, overdone his last year or whatever, 2017, I think he said. And he's like, you know what? I've been wearing Burberry since I was on the Rosie O'Donnell show. But you know what? This flannel is a little bit overdone. So he pulls out what apparently was a brand new scarf. That was silk, same pattern, same Burberry pattern, and the tags are still on it. This bothered me because, like, MJF like looked down and it's like, I know MJF thinking was like, "Crap, I don't want to reshoot this. I'm already like 5 minutes into this promo." He just rips down and like tears the tag off and throws it down real quick. But yeah, he's like wearing this scarf with the tag on, supposed to be like this awesome moment where he's like getting back at Chris Jericho or something. I don't know. And it's just he's hanging there with the tags on it. Thought that was kind of funny. Wardlow cuts a little bit of a promo on Jericho, saying that Jericho cut one of the best promos of his career last week. That was until he got to his name. That's when he started to stutter and stammer, and he just knew that uttering the name of Wardlow was a mistake. And honestly, this is a really stupid thing to say. Like, I get that they're pointing out that Jericho like stumbled over his words, got his words mixed up. You know, it happens. I didn't really like how they kept calling it a promo. Like, I know wrestling's not real, but like, it almost seemed like insider baseball a little bit, you know, like they're mixing the worlds a little bit here, which is not something MJF usually does. Did you kind of feel that way too?
I mean, I did hate on Jericho's promo. When he first cut it first, you know, calling MJF a mark and all this stuff. And I've never liked using the insider terms. And so I can't cut him a break here either. I did get annoyed when they were like, they called out JR for calling it what was the term they used? They did say the word promo, but I forget.
The immortal promo.
And I was just like, ugh. Yeah, it was. They kept like, oh, Jericho, your promo last week. And it's, yeah. So that did kind of bother me. And, you know, the other like Mark reference, Because if you don't know like wrestling terms, if you're just like a casual fan, you're not going to know what in the world they're talking about. They're like, who's Mark? Who's this guy that you're talking about?
Mark Calloway, The Undertaker? What?
Yeah. So I don't know. Like I've just never been a fan of like, I want to be immersed in the TV show. I don't want the curtain pulled back, you know, unless it's like for, you know, the better of a story or something like that. Like the, you know, Matt Hardy Edge story that kind of, you know, paid off. But, you know, that was a real life, you know, romance and betrayal and all this, like that's the kind of stuff can get worked into a story, but just like using the insider terms and all that, I don't know. It's more, I feel like it pops the smart fans and who, you know, yeah. So I'm just not a big fan of it. So I can't give him a pass in this promo either, since I kind of hated on Jericho for it, but I actually did like how they, not how they kept referencing about the promo, but I did like how Wardlow said, Jericho, as soon as you said my name, you stumbled, and it's because you knew you were saying something wrong. I at least liked how he, because even if Jericho is probably like, you know what, I did screw up, but you know, whatever, he doesn't care. But you know, the heel is going to point out the one negative of the promo,
yeah,
and be like, yeah, it's because you're scared of me. Like, so it was a great heel tactic. I thought it was a clever of them to do so.
I think Wardlow did a great job of delivering it. I think Wardlow needs more time on the mic because he's fantastic, and I really like Wardlow.
Yeah.
I just didn't love all of the insider baseball, like how they're talking about, you know, talking about it's a promo, and it almost seems like, I mean, I get it. Like, they get 7 minutes or whatever to go out there and say what they want, even if wrestling is real, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't know, just saying, like, it makes it seem less like he's actually saying something about it and more like he was rehearsing a little bit.
Yeah.
MJF did have a really good point saying that Jericho thinks he's an A, but he surrounds himself with Bs, so he looks like an A, and then he wrestles As, so he doesn't look like a B, because Jericho has wrestled the likes of Kenny Omega, Hangman Adam Page, Orange Cassidy, and even MJF himself. He said that Jericho said that he's great for 25, but he's not great for 25. He's great, period. MJF had a lot of fire in this promo. Mm-hmm. It really reminded me a lot of like an 80s promo, which I know MJF really admires old school wrestling. And I really liked that. This felt like an old school promo. And I do think that worked really well.
Yeah. And he just had like a ton of fire, as you said, and made some really good points too. Like, it's not like he, you know, will say anything that, you know, couldn't be untrue, by saying like Jericho keeps taking credit for, and it's true, like Jericho, and part of it is true. I mean, Jericho, when he had the Alpha versus, or the Omega versus, what was that?
Alpha versus Omega.
That's right. Yeah. Alpha versus Omega. I was going the right direction. When they had that match in New Japan, Jericho says like, you know, I wrestled Omega and it, you know, boosted their numbers, which is true. It did. But I mean, you could make the argument that, well, it's because Kenny Omega was a big star and Jericho is a big star and that everybody wanted to see what would happen. And so he basically, MJF was saying that, Jericho, you take credit for doing that when a lot of people just like Kenny Omega and not necessarily like you. So, so it's one of those things that like, he's just being a jerk, but there's a little bit of like a hint of truth to it sometimes. And it kind of makes it, you know, more credible of a promo that's, you know, not just straight BS. So yeah, just really good promo from MJF. I mean, it's not surprising. This guy's great. But my two complaints were, again, the insider terms, like you said, which was kind of my beef with Jericho's promo, the immortal promo, supposedly. And also similar to that, of course, I thought Jericho's went on slightly too long. This one, I didn't feel that way, but similar to Jericho's promo, it was all Jericho talking. And here, Wardlow got to say some stuff. MJF got to say some stuff. But the other members of Pinnacle didn't say a word. They just sat there. And I was like, at least let him say something. Like, I just kept seeing the side of Harwood or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
Dax. I saw like half of his face the entire promo, and like he had a match against Jericho last week and lost, and like didn't even get to say anything. So I don't know what
the most important part of this promo was?
What?
Sean Spears no longer has a blonde mohawk.
Oh, I didn't even realize it because he was all in the back and he never said anything.
He's back to the brown mohawk with the brown beard looking like $1 million and not a, you know, homeless person.
That's good.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's honestly, like, MJF was so great. It's hard to not like this promo because I did like it. And it was his promo. It's fine. Like, he could have like 90% of this, 85% of this. But the other guys should have started by saying something, and then you tossed it to MJF and let him drive it home. I just didn't like that all the group was just sitting there, and it was just MJF. Because they're all in the Blood and Guts match, and it was just basically feels like an MJF Jericho program. So those are my complaints. But other than that, MJF was awesome. So it's really hard to hate on this the promo, but.
Yeah, it's hard if you've got MJF in your group, not just to give him all the time, right? Because he's the promo guy, right? I don't know. You've got the tag team. You've got Spears, who's unfortunately the fall guy. And you got the promo guy. And then you have Wardlow, who's, you know, Wardlow. So
yes.
Everybody has their role. But yeah, we then went to the AEW Women's Championship match. Right here in the middle of the card. I thought it would actually probably open the show, but I don't feel it was a bad spot for it. I think it flowed the show pretty well.
Yeah.
And this was a really good match. I think this is Ty Conti's best match to date.
I would agree with that.
And I mean, Sheeta doesn't have a bad match. So, I mean, obviously she had a great showing here as well. I thought it was a little bit surprising. I think Sheeta played a little bit of a heel in this match. Do you feel the same way?
Oh, she definitely did.
Yeah. Kind of, on one hand, like, I think she's kind of trying to bring out the fire in Ty Conti. But on the other hand, I think it just worked really well with her being the champion and being like, hey, I'm not losing my championship. She's technically still a face. She's a good person. But it showed that a face can play a heel in a match and it actually makes sense.
And she didn't have to go like full on Sasha Banks and turn heel and be completely unlikable. She worked the heel in this match, but it was just really just coming across as a champion, trying to keep her spot and not lose her title. And just really out of desperation, she wasn't gouging the eye or, you know, whatever. It was small things like, you know, when she was getting attacked, she would grab Tay's hair or something like that and use it to her advantage. And
it's a better way of what Cody tries to do.
Right. And JR quickly points it out. He actually did a good job in this match calling stuff like that, saying like, hey, a little bit questionable from Sheeta. And
he didn't call Ty Conti by the correct name the entire time, though.
That's true.
He was saying Tay Conte the whole time.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, really good match. These girls worked very hard. They started kind of in a grappling exchange to start. It actually started kind of slow, but not like at a boring pace. It was just very methodical. Both of them, obviously, Conti has a judo background and Sheeta was showing her grappling skills. They did a lot of, grappling and judo takedowns and stuff like that, judo throws, a lot of reversing. We had Conti going for like Fujiwara armbar at one point. It was just, grappling to start with. And then they just started beating the crap out of each other. Sheeta doing a lot of damage. She did this awesome spot where she did like a backbreaker to Tay on the top turnbuckle, like just looked brutal and sent Tay to the outside. And Aubrey like immediately jumped out and checked on her. I mean, it looked like she was okay and everything went off without a hitch.
Yeah, I was concerned because it looked like it looked Aubrey brutal, went. Sure. Yeah, Aubrey went to her like frantically, and then Tay says something, and then she goes back into Sheeta. I'm like, oh crap, she's telling Sheeta to go home. Like Tay is hurt. And they go back into the ring. And what did Ty do? She like reversed Sheeta into something. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, she's not hurt or she wouldn't have done that. So,
well, I knew she's okay because like Sheeta immediately went out and like just grabbed her and picked her up. It's like, okay, she's all right.
Yeah.
Aubrey went and checked on her, but I think it just looked good. I think they did a great job of, making it convincing. There was one spot though, I think it was the same time where it wasn't really her fault, but the camera like switched right as she was like, she did a punch that like had a sound to it. And the camera like turned and she basically did the exact same thing. And you clearly saw her slap her leg when she was doing it. So she would have been fine. She was in WWE.
That's a fine. No slapping at the leg.
But it was really just an unfortunate camera cut, like right when she was doing it. But yeah, they were just beating the snot out of each other. Conti went for the DDT at one point, and she had a counter with a knee and a Falcon Arrow, which is a near fall, and she's beaten people with that before.
Yeah.
Basically, Sheeta went for her, like, was it like the Shining Wizard or something like that?
Yeah, pretty much.
And Tay reversed it. She got her up on the top turnbuckle and did like the jumping senton off of it, which that was actually almost as scary to me as the one from Tay going to the outside, because I thought she was going to blow her ankle out or something the way she landed. But
they weren't holding back at all in this match.
No, they were not. It was like they knew they were having this match. They saw Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa, which I would say is not quite to that level, but I mean, right there around it. Like, it's not far off. Like, they both worked really hard. And I mean, really, all they were missing were blood and like hardcore stuff, honestly. Like,
yeah, I think as far as like a straight up wrestling match, this might be their best women's match. I don't know, though. There's been some real bangers. I think Thunder Rosa versus Serena Deeb was really good.
Yeah, so...
it's hard to say. They've got quite the roster now. Honestly, like, looking at it, I think AEW's women's roster is doing a lot better than Raw's. A lot... Man, other than Bianca Belair and Sasha, they're doing better than SmackDown's.
I would say the only downside is, and one thing I think AEW really needs to work on, is Britt Baker is, like, the only one who's getting like TV time, like promo wise, like
Britt Baker's like the only personality in the women's division.
Yes. That's
their problem. That's what I was saying. That's why I was saying they need to bring in the Iconics. I don't care. The Iconics are not the best wrestlers in the world. There's enough good wrestlers in AEW. They need to bring some personality to the women's division. I think the Iconics.
Yeah. And let somebody like Sheeta work off of them from that. Like it's,
yeah.
Sheeta got to do like a little bit of it when she was going up against Abaddon, but yeah, other than that, they haven't really done many programs. I mean, Jade Cargill has kind of got some going on, and Britt Baker, but we got to get some baby faces out there. And
I think Red Velvet's got the chance to get over that way.
Right.
But yeah. The match ended with a backbreaker. Sheeta hit a backbreaker on a Ty Conti and followed up by basically kicking her head off.
Yep.
Like, it's her finishing move to kick her in the head, right? Like that spinning back kick. And oh my gosh, it looked like she straight up, like, I thought I was going to see her head roll down the apron. Like, it was so, so tight and so good looking. Obviously, didn't actually hit her, or it would have been real bad. And yeah, Sheeta's reign of terror, or whatever you would want to call it, continues for almost a full year now. And I think it's going to continue on Double or Nothing. I think it's probably going to end there with Britt Baker versus Sheeta.
Speaking of which, directly after the match, which I would have liked to have seen them, like, you know, seen as well as this match went. And obviously it's, you know, not something you can exactly plan for, but I would have liked to have let the crowd appreciate this and let it breathe a little bit. But they are running a TV show. They had an idea, so they, you know, kind of went straight into it. Basically after the match, I mean, right after, basically Conti rolls to the outside. Sheeta celebrating with her belt. When Britt Baker's music hits, she comes out, points at the screen. They show the contender list, and it explodes, showing that now Britt Baker is the number one contender. I did love that. She's pointing to it, and all of a sudden you just see a kendo stick get hurled at her way from Sheeta. Like, Sheeta just said, screw you, and just threw the kendo stick as a spear at her.
Not having any of that.
Backing. So, yeah. So Britt Baker and Sheeta is what they're setting up next. But the slight nitpick being, I would have liked to have seen them celebrate that Sheeta and Tay Conti just had a banger of a match and let them like shake hands or something and, you know, let the crowd kind of appreciate it. But it is what it is. It wasn't the worst thing in the world. So, yeah.
Britt Baker just played Sheeta it so next. Well, though. Gosh, yeah. she's so good at being a heel. It's amazing looking back a year ago how far she's come. And I think the time off, like when she was injured, actually did a really good thing for her because it allowed her just to focus on her character. And like I said, that's what AEW needs. They need personality. They need character in the women's division.
It was really a blessing in disguise because she wasn't actually doing a whole lot of it beforehand until she got hurt. So that kind of opened the door for her to do that and get over. And yeah, I totally agree. They need to invest more in doing some story segments like that. Hopefully with Britt being involved in the main event picture, she can do that with Shida. And yeah, Shida doesn't have to say a whole lot, but just let her, similar to how, you know, Thunder Rosa and Britt Baker were able to kind of build a story with their feud, do the same here, like make it down and dirty and build to their, you know, next pay-per-view. Cause it's going to be a big match.
Yeah. I really looking forward to that match. I think Britt Baker should definitely take it. I think Shida's had a great reign. I think it's Britt Baker's time. And at this point, I'm kind of glad they allowed Shida to retain and not go against Britt Baker at the last pay-per-view. I know I was kind of hating on it at the time, but Double or Nothing will kind of be perfect for Britt Baker to take over. So after that, we have a backstage vignette with Miro. He's basically saying that anyone who has a title has a problem because he's not going to have anything stop him from his destiny. Kip Sabian is now completely out of the picture. And he says the only question now is which champion should he beat first? And this was a really good vignette by Miro. Like, this is the Miro that I want. I don't want preppy gamer, Twitch streamer Miro. I want I'm going to eat your face off Miro and take all your titles. I think it works
I think he's kind of figured out his groove, which I think
he needed a little bit of time because his only experience was in WWE where they do everything for you. Whereas AEW, they, you know, Tony Khan has an overarching story he wants to achieve, but he kind of lets you do your own thing week to week and develop your own character and then go from there. A lot of people are thinking we might get Miro versus Darby at Double or Nothing. I think that would be really good. I'm not 100% sure that's where they're going with the TNT title. I think they might give it to Hangman first. We'll see. Because I'm thinking they've got to keep Hangman away from Kenny. How are they going to do that? I think the TNT title is a good way to do that. I would be okay, honestly, if Hangman won the TNT title and then lost it to Miro a little bit down the road. Because if there's going to be anybody who can have a convincing loss or can make me convinced that a future champion could lose to them, it'd be Miro, right? Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't hate that. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, they did point out on this episode, too, that Hangman is ranked number one, so it's kind of confusing why he's not contending for one of the titles.
They got to do something with that.
Yeah, so that would be a good way to do it. And like you said, you kind of want to keep – I mean, I think building to a Hangman versus the Elite would be awesome once they kind of get away from Eddie Kingston and Jon Moxley. So, I'd be totally down for that, for him to kind of do a side program with Miro. And Miro's a heel, so he doesn't have to win. He can still look strong, and he'd certainly look strong in this promo with his shoulders. My God, like
he's not human, man.
He's like what's like Golem, the Pokemon that's basically just like a rock on his back.
He's just muscle.
Yes, like he's just muscles everywhere, like it's crazy. So great promo from Miro. Looking forward to what he's doing next. I think he's definitely going to get in the TNT title picture. And if Hangman gets involved, that'd be great. If he just takes it from Darby, Miro, I think it'd be great too. So it'll be interesting to see. Then after this, we had the Inner Circle interviewed by Tony Schiavone, basically responding to MJF. And I liked this better than Jericho's Immortal promo.
Really? Is it because of the variety?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was. And it was the same kind of fire from Jericho. And basically all the negatives that I had from the original one that kind of took me out of it weren't here. He didn't really throw, I mean, I think he did say Mark at some point, but they really kind of stayed away from that. You had Jake Hager, talking about, they're going to make him eat through straws. They plugged a match, the Blood and Guts match. It didn't feel like it went on too long. Santana, which one?
Santana. I think
Santana. Yes. I was getting confused. Santana cut a really good promo in the middle of this.
Yeah.
So I just really enjoyed it and it got me hyped up for the Blood and Guts match.
Yeah. I think
this is what a promo should do.
Yeah. Yeah. This did a really good job of hyping it up. They used Jake Hager perfectly, which is don't let him talk too much. Just kind of give him something kind of funny and also scary to say. But yeah, man, Santana and Ortiz are like, I know that they're great in the Inner Circle and everything, but I need a Santana and Ortiz Proud and Powerful tag team title run. I need them to carry the belts, need them cutting promos anytime they're on TV and anytime they get a chance to talk. It's always really, really good. Obviously, Jericho carried a lot of this promo with his like intensity and overall charisma, right?
As he should.
But they did a great job of handing the ball off to Santana and allowing him to drop the bomb on the Pinnacle.
Yeah.
We didn't get any Sammy Guevara or Ortiz in this, but that's fine. I think we're going to get some really good. I think we're going to eventually get an FTR versus Santana and Ortiz match, which would be great. I think we'll probably get a Sean Spears versus Sammy Guevara match, which will be great. Of course, we've already gotten Jericho versus MJF. I think this did a really good job of hyping up the upcoming Blood and Guts match. And yeah, just really, really like perfectly laid out promo. I agree.
Yeah, Jericho was beat red by the end of it. He was screaming so much.
Yeah.
Very, very red.
Gonna bust a blood vessel or something.
Yeah.
What did you think about Billy Gunn versus QT Marshall, which is your next match?
I mean, honestly, I just checked out. Like, I just didn't care. QT Marshall's good. He's a good worker. I mean, he's, you know, good trainer. We see all these green guys coming to AEW and actually doing very well. So you got to get the guy credit. And Billy Gunn, I believe, is a coach as well for AEW. I mean, they're good. Not knocking the guys. I just don't care about QT Marshall versus the Nightmare family.
Yeah, I didn't love this match. I think it was a kind of a slow match, but it kind of was a regress from the rest of the show where it was kind of like go, 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 all these high-flying matches. This was a slower match. Obviously, you got to look at the two components of the match. QT Marshall and Billy Gunn aren't going to be, you know, doing 450s or anything like that. But I think this match was really what it needed to be. It made QT Marshall look strong. I like QT Marshall, and I like the Factory. I think it's going to be a really good storyline before it gets over with. And the fact that I'm getting more QT than I am Cody Rhodes right now is great. I think JR said like Tony Montana, QT Marshall, Tony Soprano, QT Marshall. I'm really enjoying this phase of QT Marshall with his bowling shirt and looking like a mob boss. I like it. I think it's pretty good. I think it's a good spot for him. And not only that, it's giving the shine to a lot of up and coming guys, and it's getting them on TV. And it's giving them something to do, because QT Marshall's not going to come out of this looking like a star. He's going to be the fall guy at the end of this, whereas Anthony Ogogo and Camarado are going to come out looking like the stars, hopefully. And Aaron Solo as well, I'm sure. I think Nick Camarado and Ogogo are really the two stars here, but Aaron Solo's like, he's no slup, you know? But yeah, this match wasn't great, but it did get them on TV. It furthered the storyline. And QT Marshall beat Billy Gunn, which doesn't seem reasonable because Billy Gunn is just a huge, huge human being. But he beat him with a diamond cutter after Anthony Gogo hit him with the kidney shot.
Yes.
Which I guess is his finisher that knocked out that guy last week or whatever that I thought was so stupid. But yeah, It was an okay match, but after the match, I think it was really what we need to focus on.
Right.
Because Ogogo goes outside, he gets a wooden chair for some reason. Like, yeah, wouldn't go, they go, bring? Go. He said, "I go, go, go." He goes outside and gets a wooden chair from under the ring. Like, when has that ever happened? He keeps steel chairs under there, not like it's like a deck chair, like so you'd use like when you're grilling.
Or like a TV tray.
Yeah, super weird things they grab out from under there. I don't know.
There was a reason, but yes.
Yeah, Dustin Rhodes rushed to the ring to break the beat down up.
With some horrible face paint.
Yeah, I don't care for the horizontal cross. Like, so he normally does the vertical half and half face paint, but he's done it once before when he faced Jake Hager, the horizontal line. It looks real dumb to me.
And it's like black on blue and red. It just doesn't...
He looks kind of like a like an NBA mascot. That's what it reminds me. Like a Smurf or something. But yeah, he basically cleared out QT Marshall, and he takes the wooden chair and breaks it over the head of Camarado, who no-sold it, as he should,
which was great. I actually, yeah, this is my favorite part of the segment.
Yeah, looked really good. I think Camarado and Ogogo come out of this looking pretty good, because even though QT Marshall won, it's really like Anthony Ogogo won, right? Because he delivered the kidney shot that really won the match.
Yep.
Camarado got to no sell the wooden chair shot. Yeah, I think this was perfectly fine. Wasn't bad.
Yeah, I just don't care about QT Marshall per se.
Yeah. Yeah. But you talked earlier about the Elite going into their trailer.
I did.
Why don't you tell us about what happened next?
So the Elite in their personal trailer, we got Kenny Omega, obviously, Don Callis, Matt and Nick Jackson, the Good Brothers, and Michael Nakazawa all in their trailer. They all cut promos. Matt says the Elite was the reason business went up in Japan. Pointed out it's called All Elite Wrestling. Don Callis also introduced Kenny Omega as the soon-to-be Impact Champion, because he's going to go up against Rich Swann, the upcoming Impact show.
First time they've mentioned this too.
Yeah. So mentioned that he was the is he the AAA champion?
Yeah.
Is that the one he's got?
Yeah.
AAA and he had both belts, I believe. Had the AEW belt. Omega basically says, all right, I want to get serious for a minute. And he starts to cut a promo when there's like a bunch of honking going outside. Oh, I forgot to say, they did talk about Kingston and Moxley, and basically said, you know, if you want some, you know where to find us. And speaking of, Omega tries to talk. He's interrupted by some honking in the background outside the trailer. And they actually played off really well. Like, it was unexpected. They didn't like oversell it. They're like, is some fan going on? Like, what's... And like Omega tried to continue throughout the honking, and he was just distracting him. He couldn't collect his thoughts. And he was like, somebody go out there and, you know, get this guy to shut up. What's going on? And all of a sudden, camera switches. There's a big truck, and who's in it but Eddie Kingston and John Moxley. They're in this giant truck, and Moxley says, 3, 2, 1. He floors his truck, rams into the Elite trailer. They both walk out they get out of the truck. They got a pipe in their hand. They walk in the trailer, but the Elite is nowhere to be found, which was kind of confusing.
Where did they go?
Like, I like the segment. It was cool, but
were they not actually in that trailer?
But that's what I thought initially, but I was like, but wait, if they weren't, they heard the honking. I mean, they did have like these cheap The Elite like things like stuck all over the trailer. So, I mean, it could have been like a plant. And they are heels. So like I could see next week them be like, aha, we got you. We're actually in this like other trailer somewhere, but like we didn't see it. And they sure kind of wanted you to believe that they got hit, but I don't know. A little strange and kind of confusing, but I guess we'll get an answer next week. But it was a good little segment. Like I said, there didn't appear to be any kind of weird WWE camera cuts. John Moxley and Eddie Kingston drove a truck into this trailer. And
yeah, they literally drove a truck through the trailer. That's a lot of damage.
And they were in the truck. Like, I don't think there was any magic trick here. Like, they just did it.
I don't think John Moxley and Eddie Kingston are afraid of a car crash.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it's something they're afraid of.
So they went in the trailer with the pipes looking for the Elite. We're not there. And then they were walking away. And John Moxley just javelin throws this pipe through the window and nearly hit Eddie Kingston. He had to get out of the way. And he's like, why don't you wait until I like move before you do that?
They're so good together, man. I love it.
It was, yeah, it was great. So Moxley and Kingston were awesome here. They just look like a bunch of killers who didn't give a crap. And yeah, I like the segment. It was just kind of confusing. So, but we'll get an answer next week, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how it goes. Maybe they had like an escape hatch. They expected it. I don't know. After that, we had Powerhouse Hobbs versus Christian Cage. Like, man, every match in this card is like, there's so much potential there. But yeah, I thought this was a really good match. I think it did exactly what it needed to do. It was kind of a slow, methodical pace where basically Hobbs just destroyed Christian Cage for the whole match, right? It sold Hobbs as a big monster heel, and Cage kind of just squeaked by with the win.
Yes, the story of this match was Powerhouse Hobbs is a powerhouse. Christian Cage is good, but he's old.
Yeah.
So he had to weather the storm with this young brute and basically find a way to claw out a victory. And that's exactly what it was. It was a really strong match. Great experience by Hobbs. And I mean, just working with Christian is going to make him better. It's a really good match. I mean, nothing like spectacularly special for it. It was just a good, solid match. And it was exactly, like you said, exactly what it needed to be.
Yeah. It made Hobbs look like a monster, but it didn't. I mean, Cage came out with the win and didn't make Hobbs look bad at all. I really liked it. That was a really good match. A little slow, but I think it worked fine. Because again, we've got some real bangers on this card, and it's, you know, I think we're working our way to that. But before we do, we actually did have a Jade Cargill backstage promo. You know, we just had a 15-minute, you know, slice of Wrestle Life that we recorded. It's not quite posted yet. Where we talked about, does AEW have too many factions?
Yes.
And Jade Cargill was one of the people we mentioned about not needing a faction. She's kind of been on her own, doing a good job. And it looks like she's joining a faction, huh?
Yeah. She basically was saying, everybody wants me. I'm the hottest, you know, talent on the roster after, you know, my thrashing of Red Velvet. And we got a promo from like Matt Hardy saying that he wants her, but for a price. And so he wants to cut her money, so she's probably not going to go with him. We got a Vicky Guerrero sighting saying she wants Jade Cargill. Who else was here? Am I missing somebody else?
I think that was it. I think it was just Matt and Vicky.
I think so. So, yeah, possibly. I hope not. But it looks like Jade might be joining somebody, as you said. So, yeah. I hope not, because she can – just do just this is a good promo from her, a good little package. So
it was a good promo, but
I don't need somebody talking for her.
I don't want anybody talking for her. That's my thing. Like,
exactly,
kind of like a female Goldberg that can cut a promo.
Yeah,
like she doesn't need somebody. I don't know.
Yeah,
but yeah, we then had the TNT Championship main event of the evening: Jungle Boy versus Darby Allin. Now this match was voted by fans, apparently.
Yeah, Darby said he wanted somebody that was ranked in the top five. He started facing these scrubs. Like, who was that dude? The fat guy that wrestled.
JD Drake.
Yeah. No more of those geeks. He wants somebody in the top 10 or the top five.
Yeah.
And so the fans got to vote and they picked Jungle Boy.
Yeah.
I'm glad they did.
When I saw this match, I was like, oh my gosh, this match is going to be amazing. And it was. I mean, I haven't seen a bad Jungle Boy single match ever. Every time they're good. He is such a superstar in the ring. Like, man, we're going to look back at this Jungle Boy, like, I don't know, first couple years, and it's going to be like, I don't know, like watching a young Owen Hart wrestle. It's like, man, remember when this guy like first started and how he was just so natural and so good and he just made everything make sense? That's what this match was. It was... You know, Darby Allin and Jungle Boy have two very different styles. Excalibur keeps putting over Darby's, you know, amateur wrestling background. He had like a year or two in high school, I think. Jungle Boy is obviously a fantastic mat wrestler. And that's really what this match started out at. But again, Darby Allin kind of started playing the heel a little bit and devolving a little bit into the, hey, I'm Darby Allin. I'm going to do some crazy stuff. I'm going to just fight this guy. I'm going to beat him up. It got really physical, really intense, really fast. And that allowed Jungle Boy to kind of pick up the pace. Darby Allin hit him with a coffin drop on the ring apron. Mm-hmm. Just, it was a really, really good match. The only thing I wasn't super involved, like super into, was Luchasaurus assist Jungle Boy up. I say assist, like, he stood there and Jungle Boy used him to get up, right?
I'm on Luchasaurus' side here. He was just kind of standing there.
He
didn't even grab Jungle Boy. Jungle Boy grabbed his arm. He even put up his arm and said, hey, I'm not doing anything. Jungle Boy used Luchasaurus to get to his feet, and then he got in the ring on his own. Luchasaurus,
on like the count of nine, right? It didn't, so he wouldn't get counted out. So like the story is, this prevented Darby Allin from winning, right?
And so, Luchasaurus, he goes over and gets on the ramp. He's like, I didn't do anything. Sting obviously didn't feel the same way. He goes over. He's like, hey, buddy, what's the deal? And just smacks him. They start brawling. And Sting's going up against the Dinosaur. They have a tug-of-war match. They lock up, and then they fight through the ramp.
And, like, a year ago, if you would have told me we were getting Luchasaurus versus Sting, I'd have been like, what kind of mushroom are you smoking, dude? These two will never be in the same building, much less fighting each other. But yeah, we got a dinosaur versus a crow, I guess. It's crazy.
A hoodlum.
Yeah, hoodlum. I didn't love it. I didn't think it looked like real smooth and everything. It kind of took away, I think.
From it felt kind of a crowbar in there of like,
we
gotta get these guys out of here.
Yeah. But it didn't completely take away from the match. Tell us about the end of the match, Kyle. You're better at the play-by-plays here.
So basically, as you said, Jungle Boy got coffin dropped on the apron. They got back in the ring. Jungle Boy hit like a huge lariat, which immediately Tony was like, cover him. And I was like, yeah, cover him. But Jungle Boy picks him up, hits a brainbuster. I was like, all right, cover him. He hits a running elbow, and then he pins him. And I was like, he probably should have covered him after the brainbuster or the lariat, but whatever. He puts him in the snare trap, which he had gone for several times.
Nobody's ever kicked out of it.
So he puts him in the snare trap. Darby's like reaching for the ropes. He actually slaps his hand on the mat as like as he's going to reach.
And, I saw that, yeah.
Excalibur, I think it might have been Tony. I believe it was Excalibur, though. Kind of gasped when he did that. And he's like, wait a minute. I wish they would have like just went into that and just like, did he tap? And just like, at least like give you the question of like, you know, like it wasn't pointed out enough that he, you know, or at least that he might have even tapped, like kind of leaning into a little bit more. But he was basically just trying to reach for the ropes. He goes for the ropes, but Jungle Boy was able to pull him back out, hit a rolling Romero special, got him back in the snare trap. Darby was basically looking like he was, you know, dead to rights. When, as you said, he was playing the heel here slightly, he had to reach up out of desperation and gouge Jungle Boy's eyes. The referee actually gave him the count in an AEW match, which I was shocked by. But the referee started counting like, hey, buddy, you can't gouge him in the eyes. But it was enough to, you know, let him escape. Jungle Boy, it was funny because he gouged him out. And I was like, man, Jungle Boy, that would suck. You can't put up with this. And he sure enough didn't. He went over and just like slapped out Darby Allin when he's laying on the mat. Just smacked the crap out of him. I was like, good God. That was the one thing I loved about this match was like, Jungle Boy, he didn't put up with anything in this match. Like,
it wouldn't take him to crap.
He was like, he was not the happy-go-lucky Jungle Boy he, you know, usually is outside the ring. When he was in these ropes, he was like, I mean, he was like standing over Darby, like just trying to impose his will. And I loved every second of it. So he just slaps him in the face. He's hitting him some ground and pound, hit him with a sunset flipped. Basically he was trying to get some momentum, but Darby was able to get the Last Supper out of nowhere, basically caught Jungle Boy off guard and was able to secure the pinfall. I mean, this match was awesome. I really liked it. It showcased both these guys. Didn't make Jungle Boy look weak. It made, you know, Allin look, you know, like a good fighting champion. Like he, you know, the kid took it to him, but he found a way to win. So, I mean, I thought this was great for both these guys. The ending was, I mean, we got a clean finish, so that was good. But it felt a little rushed and like, so Scorpio Sky and Ethan Page basically run in. I think, I don't know. Did we mention this on the show? Or was it just us talking before? I can't remember. We talked about Scorpio and Ethan being together. And I was just like, I'd rather Scorpio just be on his own. Cause they're kind of just feel like they're a thrown together tag team, like WWE style, but they run out. They're, fighting both Allen and Jungle Boy when all of a sudden Lance Archer runs up to make the save, which was kind of confusing to me because I was like, well, he kind of was at the heel a couple weeks ago, like when he was like yelling at Sting.
Yeah.
But here he comes out to make the save.
He's kind of a tweener, I guess. He's kind of all over the place.
He is, but yeah. He was at one point like more of a tweener, but like, I don't know, when he cut the promo on Sting, he felt more like he was going back to being the heel. And I guess now he's back to being on the good. Like, yeah, I'm not sure what he is, but he at least came out here to make the save. Maybe he took Sting's advice to heart and maybe it kind of swayed him back on the good side or something. But so he tries to take on Paige and Sky by himself. They hit him with a low blow, start to set him up for a move. When all of a sudden Sting comes back out with a baseball bat. I mean, I'm assuming he killed Luchasaurus with the bat. He basically took him to the back, found his bat, killed Luchasaurus, and then came out to make the save. So he ran him off, and then we basically just went straight to the end of the show. So the ending felt kind of rushed. I don't know if they were kind of running low on time or what it was, but yeah. So similar to the Tay Conti and the Shida match that kind of had a great match, and we didn't really get to relish in the ending. I felt kind of the same here where we ended this great match and it just like immediately got, you know, a heat segment and it was kind of like, we didn't really get to enjoy the fruits of the great performance from these two guys, but it is what it is. Hopefully I'm kind of hoping, I mean, we got Lance Archer involved, we got Sting involved, Luchasaurus is dead, I guess. But after this, I was kind of looking forward to seeing a Scorpio Ethan Page versus, Darby Allin and Jungle Boy match. I mean, I think it'd be pretty good.
Yeah, do you think it's more likely we'll get that or Darby and Lance Archer versus...
That's kind of what I'm thinking, but yeah, I mean, after seeing Jungle Boy and Allin go at it, like I was kind of...
I think Jungle Boy and Darby Allin would be a fantastic tag team.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
That would be really good.
And listen, I was loving Lance Archer when he was, you know, just killing people. You know, in the main events, as you said, you know, like a month or so ago. So I love the guy, but I would like to see Darby Allin and Jungle Boy kind of go at Scorpio and Ethan. I think that'd be a great match. So, yeah, but we'll see what happens. Not sure where Archer's going from here. If he's kind of going to the good side after taking Sting's advice, he had Jake with him again. So Jake's still with him. So yeah, a lot of bodies getting involved in this story. I'm assuming Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus will move on at some point, but because Scorpio and Ethan have been hanging around during Sting's promos and stuff, so and Darby's matches, so it's clear they're going in that direction. But yeah, I'm not sure who's going to be involved and who's leaving or what, but yeah, we'll see.
Either way, I'm sure it'll be good.
Yeah.
I do wish they had something else for Scorpio Sky to do, but I get it. After he lost the TNT Championship match, there's not a whole lot to do.
Yeah, but so it's fine. I'm sure we'll get a good match out of it. So not too, it's too hard. We're nitpicking here.
There's not a whole lot of bad on the show. Like we kind of have to grasp the straws to find something negative.
Yeah, but yeah. And like you said, this show was very enjoyable from start to finish. There wasn't really, I feel like the QT Marshall and Billy Gunn was like the low point, and even that wasn't bad. So really good show. If you had to give it a grade, Micah, what would be your assessment of the show? What would be your final grade?
If I had to grade this show, I don't know. It was almost perfect. It was really, really close. It's a very, very high A, like a 95. Like, he's not quite perfect, not quite an A+. There was a few things that fell, you know, below perfect. But, man, it was a really, really good show. There was a lot of really good wrestling. I don't think that was a bad match on the card. Even QT Marshall and Billy Gunn, which I know you didn't care for. But, yeah, if you had to give the show a rating, Kyle, what would you give it?
Kyle?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Hold on. What? I've recorded this whole show with Kyle.
I don't know, man.
Folks, you all were listening. Like, you heard Kyle this whole time.
No, right? This is like...
We talked about your dogs and...
No. It's like the Mandela effect. Where, like, you're positive you remember something, but it's definitely not the case.
Huh. Really? Okay. Well, it's good to know that all of the epitaphs that Kyle went on earlier were actually you.
So short version, Kyle's internet cut out. So here I am, guys. Hello.
We got a second string coming in here.
So, sorry, I was actually recording Indie Focus while these guys were recording this. So, perfect timing. Make sure to tune in this Tuesday for the strongest man in all the land, Arthur MacArthur. It's going to be great. There's my cheap plug. Kyle gave this an A-, and I do not know why, because I did not hear him. But you actually heard him talking. It just didn't record because his internet cut out. So why, do you know why he gave it an A-?
He didn't really care for QT Marshall versus Billy Gunn.
Okay.
And he's had a few nitpicks throughout the show, but overall we both agreed it was a very good show. We really enjoyed it. He said it's one of his favorite episodes in a while. So he's just a little bit more negative than we are, to be honest.
I'm sure you talked about it, but Ricky Starks coming out in basically a cowboy outfit.
I didn't even put that together.
Doing the guns. Oh, it was just so good.
I didn't even put that together. I know he came out and I was like, that's new gear. He looks like a superstar. I didn't even put it together. He was imitating the cowboy thing. Yeah. That's great.
It was so good. I'm not going to, of course, give my entire review because I wasn't here. But I will tell you that Ty Conti and Sheeta was spectacular.
Yeah, we said that it's probably the best straight-up wrestling women's wrestling match in AEW. I mean, obviously, we had the outlier with Britt Baker versus Thunder Rosa, but
yeah.
It's hard to say, though, because Thunder Rosa Serena Deeb was really good.
Yeah, really, really solid. I mean, of course, Jungle Boy and Darby is. I mean, come on. Hangman Page, Ricky Starks, absolutely terrific. Loved the Stone Cold John Moxley segment. I mean, anytime you have Mox and Eddie on the same screen.
We were kind of confused because, like, where did the Elite go?
That's fair.
I think they'll probably go back to it. Maybe they'll have like a little escape hatch in the bottom.
My assumption is when they saw the truck coming, they left because the door was on the other side.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they'll follow up with that. Christian looked strong against Powerhouse Hobbs. I love this episode. It was so, so good. And again, I was there live, so I'm biased. But I just had so much fun the whole time. There was not a single moment that I'm like, this is kind of rubbish. Like, let's move this along. I loved it. And QT Marshall and Billy Gunn was the weakness of the night, but it's not fair. It's not fair to say.
It did what it meant to do. I mean, and like I said earlier in the show, it highlighted Anthony Ogogo and Nick Camerato, which are two future stars in AEW.
Yeah.
I think QT Marshall
and Dusty Rhodes face paint. Ugh.
Kyle and I both didn't really care for that.
Oh, I loved it. It was so
really
good.
I think he looks like an NBA mascot.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't care.
Fine.
For it. Like, or I guess an NHL mascot, like Grizz. Reminds me of Grizz. I don't know. That was a really good show. I think every match did a really good job of what it was supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Factory storyline is firing on all cylinders on getting these young guys some screen time. Like I said earlier, I don't think the end of the story is going to have QT Marshall on top. It's going to have him in the bottom under all the crumbling rubble. And which is where he should be, because he's great backstage and he's fine on TV, but he's not the star here.
Yeah.
After this storyline, he's going to fade back into his backstage role, and it's going to leave Anthony Ogogo, Nick Camerato, Aaron Solo looking like stars, which is exactly what they should be doing. Billy Gunn putting over the young guy, QT Marshall, exactly what he should be doing, making him look strong. Christian Cage versus Powerhouse Hobbs, exactly what it should have done, because Powerhouse Hobbs looked like a killer and Ed Christian just squeezed by just from his veteran instincts. So good. Really good show. Liked all of it.
Yeah. So I'm gonna grade it A. Absolutely just terrific. And again, I could have talked about this way more, but
I would have given it an A+ if Jungle Boy would have came out Tarzan swinging. I requested it last week. They didn't give it to me. Oh well,
yeah. Sorry about that.
We'll get it on his AEW championship first reign. He's gonna come out swinging from the rafters.
You can't really do that in Daly's place unless you go ziplining from the crowd. Like it doesn't work with the way it's
set up. I'll take whatever. However they need to do it.
Oh my gosh! Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is Wrestle Life Radio. You have heard Kyle Pauly, and you can follow him at Kyle.Pauly on Instagram. You can follow me at Wrestle Life Matt. I'm here. Cheap plug. At Facebook and, or excuse me, at Instagram and Twitter. You can follow us all on Facebook and Instagram at Wrestle Life Radio and Twitter at Wrestle Life Pod. Listen to us wherever, including where you're listening to us right now. Now, I don't want to take over your show, Micah. Do you have anything to say in closing?
I think this is the first time in a while we've all three been on a review show.
Yeah, just weird,
not
right?
At the same time.
Yeah, just can't make it happen. That's
like,
all right.
Like ships crossing in the night.
I actually want to do the one in 2 weeks with you guys because it's Blood and Guts.
Yeah.
But I can't do it. I've already got plans.
So
I won't be able to make it. But I'm sure Raleigh will want to join. Do that
Ooh,
one
that's
match
gonna be
card.
That's going to be a tough one for us, too. That's our anniversary. I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see. Ladies and germs, thank you for following us. And we hope you all have an absolutely wonderful day.
Let's have a moment of silence for Kyle's internet connection.
That's enough.
Yeah, that's enough.